we've been told for so long that we don't take action. All we do is like sit on our phones and play video games. And you look at how things are actually going outside and in online with something like Actathon, and it's very clear that young people are about it and running this.
Well, people were sick of hearing that for some time, and they heard it for about 10 years. And there's obviously about three generations here that kind of get lumped into one between millennials, probably the people a little bit older than us, and then us. And now there's even kind of a subsection growing beneath us, which I think has been interesting. We talked about that last episode. Like, we are one of four mini generations here because stuff has moved so fast in these last 10 to 20 years that I think the generations kind of form a little more solidly, where we're ones that aren't completely attached to technology, but we still have it as like a very useful, reliable tool. Millennials probably distinctly remember their full time through college without attachment.
Yeah, I think it goes how social media evolved.
Yeah.
Because you had a lot of AIM people, you know, instant messaging, and then you've got MySpace people, which kind of feed into Facebook. And then I think we come in right where Instagram and Snapchat were blowing up, right when we were around middle school. And now you have some other socials like TikTok. But like these young kids, the kids younger than us, obviously I'm 21, about to turn 22, you're 22. Kids younger than us, you said we have a little bit of that like remembering life before everything was super, super techie. These kids younger than us, this is all they know, and they don't give a heck. They don't give a fuck about anything, Bob. Like they care so much about the right things, and they go so hard for it. It's crazy.
I find it funny, too, because we do always talk about the two sides of social, the good side and the bad side. And there was a time where you would associate errors with drugs, and there were different errors aligned with drugs. Maybe drugs are done. And
I don't think that's the case. I think they're probably no. I think they're probably still around.
But we know there's some parallels there
between
the two.
Yeah.
So what we're obviously referring to is Actathon, which was a brainchild of our friends Ohima Dixon, Kayla Dorsey, two fellow Syracuse graduates who saw the blackout initiative, which I think was another initiative by a couple of college students or recent graduates who wanted to shut down like selfies and all the
It was that
nonsense.
And it was supposed to be a day of thought, a day of stepping back for the music industry as well.
And again, it kind of got off message a little bit and didn't prove as effective as I think the people would want it to be. So that kind of crashed and burned. Everybody realized that the black square just kind of became like a filler for what could have actually been information, initiative, action. And unfortunately for them, what probably started as a good intention thing just kind of crashed and burned. So this was a response to that Actathon where Ohima and Kayla set up a website. It had links to representatives, all kinds of people in states, mayors, all that stuff, where people in different parts of the country could reach out to their elected officials and hold them responsible at a time like this. And I think it underscores what Kyrie Irving reportedly talked about this week, where we're at a moment where there's so much support, 78% in a poll support fighting against racism, or I think the specific term was that racism is a problem. 68% support the protests. And all of a sudden, these politicians feed her to the fire in an election year where they have to listen a little bit more than they probably normally would be. A lot of these politicians are for election. There's a presidential election. So it was a very well-timed and I think effective mix of entertainment and action. And like you said, Taylor, we even got a little credit from our boss here, Nick Gelso. He said, this generation gets out there and they're doing things. Like, they are very intent on changing things right now, and it's working. Boston's divested from the police to some degree. I think it was to the tune of $3 to $15 million. That conversation continues in Minnesota, and there's a lot of hunger for action across the country at a higher rate than we would have ever imagined. And unfortunately, things got fueled even hotter by the death of Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta. Amazing that that would happen. Not amazing, that's not the right word. Stunning that would happen at this time, given all the consciousness of everything. But I also think it's reflective of how it's not necessarily individual actors here. Like, this is a systemic thing. We use that word systemic a ton. Kyrie used systematic. It's related. It's not exactly the same thing, but policies, culture, a lot of these different things play into the way that police end up killing people in these circumstances. And we talk about good cop, bad cop. I don't think it's as simple as the individuals and personalities in this. Everybody in the world knows what's going on, and they still killed another person? I mean, that says something.
It doesn't matter. Supreme Court ruled today or yesterday to not even consider doing away with qualified immunity. It doesn't matter. They introduced body cameras, so now there's footage of everything that happens. It keeps happening. People have cell phones out. We get video of George Floyd, you know, dying on the ground. It keeps happening. It'll keep happening until there's real consequences and real action to defund and ultimately abolish the system we have in place and build something back that's more community-based, more safety-based, more actually there's care behind it, and not, it's not a cash cow. Because right now, I mean, if you look at things, there's such a self-sustaining system in police, especially financially, and it's all based on fighting crime. And if there's not a ton of crime to fight, crime gets manufactured. And I think we saw a lot of that in a lot of these protests. I talked about it with Nate, and I've talked about it on Twitter. I've talked about it a lot. The curfew is just a rule to put in place that when it's whatever hour the curfew is, now all these people are breaking that rule and we can do whatever we want. So really the police can do whatever they want because there's no consequences. There are none. Even we saw one of the officers who was arrested, you know, late in Minnesota posted his bail and left. So you're right. Like, we're all
pause on a lot of these cases. The guy,
everybody knows what's happening in the world, and it's still happening. And honestly, the conversation has shifted a lot on Twitter today. And you know, with the passing of Toy and Salau down in Tallahassee, that it's not just and granted, this is coming from me, but it's all Black Lives Matter. And I think the movement at this point, looking at this movement and how it seems to be spreading with the people who haven't fallen off and didn't treat it like a social media trend, how it seems to be really, really resonating deeper every day with everything that happens. And now you're seeing that the people at the base of this, the people who are on the ground, the people who are affected the most by this, are making their voices so loud and explaining that all Black Lives Matter. It's not just these people we see in these videos. It's all of them, you know, across everything. And that's going to ultimately lead to the better movement. Sorry that got off topic, but you know, it's just something like that's kind of how this whole thing has been. It's like, it's going one way and then other stuff pushes it, you know, other directions. So,
yeah, it all fits. There's a lot to this, and it's not a simple movement. It's not a unilateral movement. There's a lot of different capacities that go into this, and I wasn't 100% sure if divestment or defunding, elimination, those are all kind of three different things, and people have three different levels there, and maybe there's even more to which they'd like to see police adjusted. But the moderate reform movement has really been rebuked in a very aggressive way between the Supreme Court case that you mentioned. I didn't realize the lack of FOIA reach into police departments has. Like, there's a very limited access to protocol, policy, punishments, lawsuits, all those different things.
The police report for Breonna Taylor's murder is empty.
Yeah.
It's so blank.
I mean, the accountability that reform seems to drive on isn't there. You had police outside of Washington, D.C. last week without insignia or badge numbers or those kind of things. And badge numbers continue to get covered up in the streets. Reform isn't working, and it's being openly rebuked in this time. And there's sympathizers out there who, in the Rayshard Brooks case, continue to turn it back on the scuffle. I saw one tweet that said, if you gave a life imprisonment to someone who resists arrest, that would solve things. And it's just this continued mindset that if you continue to over-police and beat crime out, and like you talked about, push these new initiatives that are even tougher on crime, like policing things to death hasn't worked.
We're seeing Bomani Jones's idea of that Two Americas thing, that, you know, the hashtag Two Americas that he uses pretty frequently. You and I were probably brought up thinking much, much differently about police than people in the black community. So you're seeing these tweets and these statements and these thoughts and these sentiments from these people who didn't grow up in any sort of adverse conditions. So their idea is, well, if you listen to the police, nothing bad happens. They don't consider the other side, even though there's a thread of, what, 400 videos now, 400 plus videos of police instigating and escalating violence at these protests. The idea that these people are still out here thinking, well, if you listen, then this won't happen. If you listen, then this won't happen. We saw the footage of Rayshard Brooks speaking with those two officers in the Wendy's parking lot. He said, I've been drinking, celebrating my daughter's birthday. My sister's house is right over there. Let me just go over there. But the police kept pushing. All of a sudden, it's physical. All of a sudden, he's got both of them on the ground. All of a sudden, he's running away, and then they murder him. And that can't happen.
And you know what really gets me on this is there should be a level of sympathy there. And I guess experiences kind of separate those two things. But I know 100% that I want to have strong rights and restrictions when a police officer pulls me over, just as an American citizen. I mean, that's the Bill of Rights. Like, that's everything we celebrate and fly the flag for. Yep. And that should be something that everybody agrees with. It's very American to have a suspicion, to have protections, and to know how to talk to a police officer in these situations legally. Because like I said on my episode last week, it's a legal exchange. And that's where the Two America thing confuses me mightily, because I think this kind of is a universal question when it comes to the interactions with the police. Bomani said another poignant thing last week, that racism really is bad for white people.
Yeah.
Like, if you're willing to give these rights that you have in the face of police, if you're willing to say someone should be able to be killed in the streets because they've committed any assortment of crime, that's bad for Americans everywhere. And
it's brainwash.
Yeah, this mindset that it can't come to your front door at some point is really where racism starts to get damaging for everybody across America, because you don't know who the next group could be that's persecuted. You don't know what the next idea that could be criminalized could be. This is the very fundamental thinking of America, of democracy, and it gets so distorted just because people get so scared and pissed off and worried about crime.
Wow. When you have centuries and centuries at this point, centuries worth of a system that's set up to keep one group of people down, and it keeps morphing and keeps transforming. And granted, you and I both benefit from this system mightily. There, it's made so you and I, using that generally, are blind to the plight, and that's how it keeps going. If you convince the oppressing group that they're not oppressing, they're going to believe that. And that's what, if you look at everything, and this isn't conspiracy theorists, this isn't anything. If you look at how we're educated, how we're brought up, it's all designed to make us fall in line. It's all designed to make us fall in line to this system that keeps sustaining itself and keeps hurting one group of people while benefiting another. And that can't continue to happen. And that's why this movement feels a little bit different, because that seems to be the root of the focus for a lot of people. It is fixing deep, deep social change and not just surface change, because we've seen that these surface changes, especially within police departments, are absolutely empty. Chokeholds were banned in New York City in 1993. Eric Garner was killed by a chokehold in 2014. Cuomo just re-banned chokeholds in 2020. That doesn't make any sense. That's empty. These police are out here kneeling, marching with protesters, and 2 hours later, tear gassing them, punching them in the face. Every street in America has a huge mural on it now. And in those same cities, the mayors and the higher ups are still like, no, there's no way we're going to take any money away from the things from police and put them towards things that matter. So it's just such a deeper rooted thing. And it goes back centuries, and it goes back to the beginning of time. And it seems to me that people are realizing that at a greater rate than they ever have. And there's at least a willingness to stand up to those centuries worth of, you know, just continuing on, putting your head down and going on because, quote unquote, that's how it always is. That's how it's always going to be. That's how it's been since the beginning of time. And it seems like now there's a willingness to stand up against that idea and say, we don't care. It's time to change that.
We've talked a lot. There's still so much to say this week. We're going to talk about the Act-a-thon some more. Soap on Deb is with us later this week on Kyrie Irving, the NBA return, some of those outstanding topics alongside his book and what's going on in the world right now as a whole too. He had a very disheveled look that I think is very universal across everybody's face right now. And what has gone on over almost 3 weeks now, as I said, is going to go on all summer. Rayshard Brooks killing, instigate a lot more anger on this. And we have quite a bit of more to say on this. Dome Theory is available on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, all those different platforms, realbobmanning.com. The links are up there. Audio Boom page with like 15 different links to different platforms if I didn't mention yours. And you can follow us at Dome Theory.
Let's get into this interview with Kayla Dorsey, a recent public relations and information technology graduate, along with me at the Syracuse University, as well as Ohima Dixon, who studied art alongside me at Syracuse University. When we all first got there, one of the ways we got integrated into campus was through this group we formed called The Village. It was Siaka Taylor-Lewis, Simone Ayers, Jael Jones, Ohima, Kayla joined later on, Dan Scott, my roommate, Anthony Obas, Matt Magical. We all brought different skills to the table, whether it was writing, videography, photography, visual art, and we formed this group that was somewhat social, somewhat media-driven. We did some videos for some organizations on campus, highlighted some notable individuals on campus, and it was very Instagram-heavy. Lasted a year, but nonetheless, it formed these connections that we had throughout college that we used in similar ways. The Village didn't live on, but when different events, projects, even moments like the protests on campus during our senior year came up, we were all able to pitch into these different moments that came up through our collective skills. So we finished school in the spring. I finished in the winter. And all of a sudden, we come into this moment that Taylor and I just talked about where racial justice, police brutality, all these different topics are floating around. And the Black Square, social media blackout, became a infamous moment during the last 3 weeks. Its original intent was to blackout the music industry, pull funds away from that, streaming, all those different things, as well as clear social media, selfies, self-indulgence, all these different things that you see there on a regular basis to try to highlight the Black Lives Matter movement that was going on at that time. Instead, what it did was pull away from information, updates, the videos that we were seeing on the streets of what was going on at the protests, whether it was more police brutality or important events that were going on city by city, and instead you just saw a bunch of black squares. So Ohima came up with this idea in coordination with Kayla, Dan, who I mentioned before, my old roommate, Blake Duncanson, a friend of ours, whole list of people who are around us at Syracuse. And I've talked about this on this podcast before, how powerful it is to have people around you. Like, I wrote an article about Freddie Gibbs and Madlib a couple weeks ago. I know my friend Matt, who I mentioned, was part of The Village. Great drawer. Good with visual art himself. He came up with a great drawing for that article that I've used as a representative for it. And I wrote a profile during the fall that he was able to draw. So Hema pulls in all these people around her, namely Kayla, who did a lot of the promotion for this, pulled in thousands of people to this Act-a-thon. And you can check it out on actathon.com. You go on the website, list every state. So June 12th and 13th, hundreds, thousands of people we know come together. And based on time slots those 2 days, they called representatives in their area. And I believe they hit 46 to 47 states when I talked to Ahima about this. Now, part of this interview got cut off on the front end. That's why I'm filling in some of the information here. But we got into a conversation, Ahima, Kayla, and I, about the flow of events, what we want to see out of these calls. There's different scripts on here. Now, if I pull up Massachusetts, your senators, representatives in your area, as well as scripts to read. Now, it came up that it's important to formulate these in your own way to be able to get through to your elected officials. So, for 2 days, calls started flowing in the offices. We talked about what we wanted to highlight during these calls, whether we were able to get through to the politicians during these 2 days of events. It was also great Instagram Live I've talked about on here too, how that's become a cultural epicenter during the pandemic. And we had a friend, Kyrie, Troyce Patones, do a DJ set on there, meditation, different speakers throughout the days. And those are all available on Actathon's Instagram page, Facebook page. Those got shut down midway through the event. Ahima mentioned that she couldn't figure out why. It was the flow of traffic, apparently, that was going toward the website from those social media pages that got it shut down, I believe, once or twice during the 2 days. So go check that out, actathon.com. I think it's very fitting that it continues. All the information's still there. Those phone lines are still open to your local representatives. It's an election year. So you can go check out the resources that are available to you there. It was a 2-day event, but the prerogative continues for everybody involved to reach out and hash out ideas and see where their elected officials are when it comes to stopping police violence, police brutality. As I talk about in here, it's an issue that could affect everybody at any given point, but it has primarily affected the black population in this country over time. We just don't think about how it could come back to hurt us in different places if we're not protecting our rights, if we're not standing up for over-encroachment in law enforcement relative to what you do. Because there's a lot of laws, there's a lot of statutes in this country. You could always end up in an interaction that goes wrong and breaks your rights. So we got to hammer that down over the next week or two. As I talked about with Taylor in the opener, we're talking to Soap on Deb later in the week about Kyrie Irving's comments. We got into that a little bit at the end of this conversation as well with Ahima and Kayla. I think he brought up a poignant point. If you want to check out my thoughts on his comments that we heard through the call with the NBA Players Union, you can head over to CelticsBlog.com. My piece is up there. Kyrie Irving has a point. And you can head to Audio Boom or RealBobManning.com. I have links up to subscribe to Dome Theory, formerly the Bobcast. And you can go do that and hear our episode later in the week with Soap on, as well as our conversation last week with Jason Buford, who was out at the Black Lives Matter marches in New York. We talked about why Freddie Gibbs' Alfredo is such an important album for this moment. So sports culture continuing here, but we can't ignore what's going on. We got to keep the conversation rolling. I'm glad we can do it with some friends here. Here's Ahima and Kayla.
What were the conversations like in your both experiences? Did you get through to any politicians? Was it mostly voicemails?
Personally, like, we went through and called a lot of people. Like, I think that, like, it just depended on the state. Some states have more calls than others, especially like Minnesota with Minneapolis and Kentucky with Breonna Taylor. Like, their states definitely had a higher influx of calls, so like your likelihood of reaching directly to your senator, your mayor, was just not as likely as it would be for a more like low-key state, such as like if you were calling from West Virginia. Like, there might not be as much traffic. And like, some of the phone numbers that we provided were direct lines to mayor. Like, I know Ahima called the mayor on accident.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny that the reason why I was just paused is because we got a reply on the Acton account of a mayor that actually replied to somebody. So I'm just kind of replying to that person saying, like, you know, making sure that you are, you know, now it's the next part is watching for those replies and also just not being impacted by big Black Lives Matter paintings in the street, but actually ask them, okay, like, what's the who, what, when, where, why, how of this plan? Let me see, like, what's the budget? Let's have a forum as a city. And I think these forums that we're starting to see more and more are important. And I don't think we have a moment in U.S. history where citizens have been more involved in local government as a whole. I think a lot of people think of local government like, oh, fuck it. But then we start to realize now, like, okay, like, these are actually, like, really important things. And so it's just been interesting to watch that come together and seeing citizens. And I think, I mean, I like theoretical texts, and I kind of come back to the idea of the Republic by Plato, and how in the Republic that the state's interests are supposed to be the citizens. So the citizens have now realized that the state's interests are not. And so watching them kind of flip that construct back on itself and kind of flipping democracy back onto itself is interesting. And it's interesting seeing citizens outside of everything that's going on, just the concept of the citizen in the state, basis on the state, like, you've failed and I'm going to watch you now. And so having that power as citizens and remembering it.
And especially from young people, we had like majority, we had all ages participate, but
yeah, we had all 24.
But I think that hearing like especially your local representatives, hearing that from a young person is really gonna do, like, it's a little more powerful too.
I think this is so great on so many levels too, because what people are realizing right now is that a lot of this rights we talk about when it comes to the police, when it comes to interacting with governments, I mean, that's stuff everybody can benefit from. I mean, the premise for so long was that racism is honestly bad for white people because you're handing away rights to the state that could be used against you at some point too. Like, everybody has this premise of the police as people, when they're really just agents of the state when they put on that uniform. So if you're willing to give away your life just because you broke any little crime, like, there's this exchange that people are comfortable with for some reason, that if you break any crime whatsoever, if you commit any minor infraction, it's been the excuse used for killing Black people for so long. Cigarillos, any stolen little item, any scrum with police, there can be a death there. And I think that's something that has affected Black people at a much higher rate, obviously, but it's something that can come home to roost on any group idea down the line. Like, this is about everybody's rights at this time.
They just need to, like, police just need to end. It is just off of a complete ideal of just humiliating people and nothing good and just slave control. And so really just, like, the thing that I think most people are starting to realize, I hope, is that when you start to really think about your logic of, oh, why can't we give the police more money, or why can't we actually get rid of the police, you start to realize how many areas that the state has quietly under the nose of all of us been defunding for years. The arts, education, healthcare, and funneling this money into these other systems. And so I think now we start to look at these budgets. I will say this, one of the first time I really looked at a police budget, I didn't know that at all. I knew, you know, defund the police, but I didn't know that that amount of money was spent. So looking at, like, something like the LA City's budget and seeing their biggest problem in the entire state being solved by even what it is even like a dollar off of what the real money that they spent on the police, it's just kind of like crazy to watch and crazy to see. And it also just gives you, I think it's a wake-up call. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit radical, but I think it's a wake-up call to the citizens about the state, is that you need to keep another eye because there may be something else is going on here, because no normal human being would do that for any good person, like for any good of human being at all. So there's something clearly going on here that I think people are waking up to.
Yeah, and I think a good example of that is what happened most recently with Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta. He was sleeping in his car at a drive-through, and the police, you know, all they had to do was tell him, like, he was sleeping in his car. All you do is tell him, hey, please move your car to the drive-through, and please just move your car into a parking spot. And they frisked him, and they knew he wasn't armed, which they shouldn't have even had to frisk him. All they had to do was tell him to move his car, and they still killed him, and they knew he wasn't armed, and they had a conversation with him. And so I don't understand what that clearly just showed to me, that the police, even right now post George Floyd, still don't understand anything that's going on, and that they're not willing to make a change, so that there's the only option is to break it all apart to ever rebuild that.
It was the greatest example against the reform movement. And there still are people out there that think reform is possible, which if we're in this climate where 24/7, this is the biggest news story, this is the biggest event going on in the world, everybody knows about it, and another person died at the hands of this, like in this environment, like what's...
And they knew he was unarmed. That's what I...
It was just clear that, like, you know, like, if you want to ask yourself a question about humanity, like, look at the story of Richard Brooks and ask why they didn't take him to a hospital. The man wasn't harmful. The man wasn't agitated. None of that. None of that. He clearly just needed to be taken to a hospital because he was, if anything, a DUI, which, yes, it's wrong, but don't act like those same police officers or some other one of their brothers or whatever they know in the force. I bet they were a frat brother that drove drunk one time in college. So don't act like no one's made that mistake. Oh, he was a frat brother? Exactly. So, exactly. That even makes the story 10 times funny. Ironic is the word. Because it's just the way that people are willing to disregard their own mistakes when they put on a uniform. Like, don't act like people don't make mistakes. That's why I've been being very angry when people try to criminalize George Floyd or any of these people. And I'm like, don't act like we're not, what, because you're black, you're not allowed to make a mistake. And if you do, that's what they're going to do to, like, you know, rationalize your dad. Like, no, that person just needed to be taken care of, not shot. Not shot. And why do you have to work so, why is it such a mission
in the for back.
Deaf people? Because what's wrong with someone running away if they didn't do anything wrong? I'm sorry. Like,
well, and the police now are a trigger for black people. So it's just, with the news right now, it's justified to run away from a police officer because people are scared. People are scared. Like, your first instinct when you see a police officer, it's like a fight or flight response. Like, that is inherent trauma from what we've seen.
I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, my little sister, as young as she is, like, we got pulled over the other day by a black woman cop. And just to show you, it's just everyone else. Everyone's scared. Like, she literally was crying. And the cop, like, I think had a moment when she was, like, realizing the uniform she put on and what that meant for you. Because she was trying to relate to my sister. And my sister did not want to relate with her at all. She was terrified of her.
Yeah, and who knows always what's going to happen when you go into custody. I mean, there's been countless stories of what happens after you go into custody from times longer ago where some... absurdly atrocious things happen in those circumstances. And then more recently too, who was the woman who died in custody?
Sandra Bland.
Yeah. I mean, like that is probably what's going through people's mind when they imagine going into jail. And this flow of events, like it's uncanny and it's also traumatizing to see the flow of events over the last month, where you go from the very first one, the Central Park incident, where that brings up this conversation of calling the police on people over minor things. And then you go to Ahmaud Arbery, the vigilante killing over a perceived crime by a citizen police. That makes you think about what some of the alternatives of police down the line could possibly bring as well. And then you move on to George Floyd and then Richard Brooks. Like, it just was this fluid flow of events that brought like every single angle here of just how many issues there are across the board here, all these different circumstances. And with Brooks, really did come down to like who's calling the police on this guy, just because he's sleeping in his car. I guess he was in the drive-through or what, but like people need to have a better understanding that these interactions between people and police just have such potential to become so deadly that you have to rethink how you deal with things. Like, try to deal with it yourself on a very basic human level first before you bring in the state. Like people need to rethink their actions in a lot of different circumstances with this. I wonder how the person who called the police on him is feeling right now. Like, I don't even know who it was or what caused him to come there, but like, and I read another great article too about that concept of the traffic stop and just how it's like engineered to cause these tensions. And
we just have way too much technology just to be getting pulled over by police. Like, that's what I believe. For as much as we rely on technology for everything else, I just think that we have way too much technology, AI, all this stuff now to be actually getting pulled over by police. Like, if you want to give me a ticket, give me a ticket by the camera. Don't pull me over and like have an interaction.
That's how it works in a lot of Europe. Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, East Coast too. I mean, like, you know, in DC you can't go anywhere without getting a, you know, ticket would be a camera. But I mean, there's just so many minor things as well, like running a red light. Like, I know it sounds like a little ridiculous, but there's just certain things I don't think that need full cop interactions, especially what cops represent now.
There's so many different issues here, but to bring it back to Act-A-Thon, I do find it intriguing what kind of mission you want to send to people, or message you want to send to people at different levels of government right now. Like, is this full blown defund the police 100%? Imagine what's next beyond them.
It's abolish, in my mind, at least. Like, I want the police gone. It starts off with defunding, and I think that's where sometimes people get confused and think I want to be palatable, but my end goal is abolishing. It's just, I realize that it may be steps and steps. Even though I want it to be one certain way in my head, I'd love to wake up tomorrow and the police were gone. I think with the people that we have in charge right now, it's going to start with defunding and then abolishing as the game plan.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't know what the answer is for, who should be. Like, I understand the community policing, but then there comes the issue with, Trayvon Martin was killed by community police.
That's where you go back to the Ahmaud Arbery case.
And so I don't really have the answers yet. And it's up to us to do the research.
My answer is educate
each other.
But in a certain level too, somebody asked me this today and I said, it sounds really messed up, but I do have hope in the young generation. And I truly believe, in some sense, it's waiting for some people to die out. And that sounds crazy to say. But I think that a lot more things will become a minority when you even there's this video of this girl and she's yelling at her father. And so for kids to have that awakening, because kids are so pure, people aren't racist when they're born. So a lot of times when kids learn racist behaviors, it's learned from nasty old adults. So for kids now to have this moment of waking up too, I even think kids that are in racist households are waking up as well. Because kids are not naturally like this. So I have hope in the younger generation. And I truly think that we will just begin to see less of it as we become a better society, which sounds silly. I think also certain things like economic systems will have to change. I think it will take a large, the revolution will happen, I think, in many ways. I think that along with kids changing just naturally, it will be changing curriculums, changing the ways that we learn about history, changing the ways that we redline school districts, changing the ways in which we, provide for workers, changing all of these things, changing which opportunities are available for people. And I think that if there's any testament to how it can exist, mind you, this country isn't perfect, but a lot of the Nordic countries, I think, are onto something, but what they still have are older populations that suck. They're just racist old people. But I think that it will come in a lot of different ways, and I think that there are futures without this, and I think just what this is the stripping of humanity on a basic level. But yeah,
but my question is, how do we punish non-racial acts of violence? How do we punish domestic violence, abusers, regular homicides?
I think it's going to take some the same way it took some radical imagination to come up with the police.
Mm-hmm.
What's the way that we can make these slaves really feel embarrassed and dehumanized? I think it will take radical imagination. I don't have, the answer to everything. Mm-hmm. I think that what it will take, and I think when I listen to the voices that are out there, when I listen to the voices in the streets, that people are starting to brainstorm and come up with what ideas, what this really looks like. And when I say a future without police, I think there are still ways to have monitoring of sorts, but not built in the structure of police. There's no such thing as police reform. I'm going to take this bad apple and make it taste a little better. No, it's still shit. It's old,
Well, I think we look to Camden, New Jersey, how they, for their police, they completely, got rid of their police and built up a whole new police system, and their crime rate has dropped 50%. Mm-hmm. So I think that Minneapolis is probably looking at that city and seeing, where they go from here. I guess Minneapolis will be the test city. Their city council voted to go to the police, so we're gonna see what happens, we're gonna see where that goes. It's definitely gonna have to do a lot of experiments before we get it right.
But what worries me about Minneapolis is just that the conversation was they disbanded the police, but what are they doing outside of that to make sure that those people, I hate the word at risk, but you know what I mean, in terms of people that are going down certain paths, how do you stop that? And that's truly by education and those systems like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, while they're disbanding the police, what other community initiatives are you starting? That's why I pray that, you know, great organizations like Black Vintage Collective, Minnesota Freedom Fund, and all these orgs that have money now, I pray
we'll go out
political movement and actually use it to do real groundwork on the ground. Because at this point, I think Black people have asked for a long time, like, what are our reparations? And I think that if you look really deep inside of yourself, it doesn't look exactly like what we wanted, like 40 acres and a mule, but this is a very different and complex form of reparations. The amount of money that you've seen flown into Black causes right now, and that I believe that, I think there's a mindset right now that's changing that you will be seeing, is a form of reparation, because a reparation is to repay. And so I feel like when you look at, you know, Minnesota Freedom Fund having $20 million themselves, you know, and imagining if orgs, you know, behind them, what they're having as well. I think it has been a sort of reparations of sorts, but what it's going to take now is within our own communities as well, spreading out that money and making it like actual initiatives, because we need to stop thinking that the state is going to save us from everything. And we need to start taking care of ourselves as well.
Yeah.
You, infrastructure.
You always worry about the backlash too, after something like this. Great gains for Black people have always been followed by great retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can build.
It's scary times.
Yeah, you can build something, but is someone going to tear it down? I mean, that's always the worry. And that's been the Trump presidency to some degree. Yeah. I mean, it's been a retaliation to the gains that were made 8 years prior. Mm-hmm. I like the budget point you made earlier. Like, that's where this is going to ultimately have to attempt to work out. And there's going to be bumps along the way like this. The elimination of police is going to have some, you know, bad, horrific stories. Like, there's going to be like, what happened here? What could have happened here?
We're going to try and use it as the one example of like, oh, this is what, you know, and so I think it truly takes radical imagination. And it's been interesting looking at, like, I think my own work as an artist is about Black imagination in an abstract sense. And I think right now we're seeing real radicalized imagination about real things. And so, like, for Black people to even imagine a state where they don't have to be harassed by police, and not even just Black people, everyone alike, is just, like, I think a really powerful moment. But then there's also, like, you know, intercommunally, there's a lot of work to be done, because guess what? Something that worries me is, while we're fighting this fight, why are there certain things that require their own separate movement in terms of, like, why are we not amplifying them in ours as well? And when I say argument, it should be all of us. And the fact that people don't care as much, so they have to make their own movements, and we, is kind of worrying, because, like, I see a lot of, like, my Black trans sisters and Black trans community, disabled community, and a lot of Black women are being left out of this. And so I'm curious to see what is going to happen to the Black Lives Matter movement. Is it just going to be put into a heteronormative cis kind of, you know, way, where it's leaving behind a lot of these other important Black lives? And so there's a lot of work to be done on multiple levels, which is why I think mutual aid is one of the coolest things we've seen growing out of this. And just the idea to have each other and kind of having those systems of, like, backings. And so you have those kind of safe nets as well. I think the new legislation that was passed, minus the three fucks that voted it down, including one Black man, was really cool, because we talk about trans workers, and a lot of times when they go into sex work, it's because they don't, you know, they get fired from the workplace. But what are we doing to make sure trans people are getting hired? So there's just such a complex net of work. And I think a lot of it, it sounds complex, but I think sometimes I simplify it down by saying that it really is just going to take a moral awakening, which I think we are in the midst of. And I think, especially if it's not us, I encourage people to think about how the 10-year-old is looking at this thinking. Because, like I said, kids' minds are pure. They are. They're just naturally that way. Before they're corrupted and everything else, like, they have pure thoughts. And so I think that it's interesting to think how they're going to see this to change it.
Yeah, the education infrastructure through social media during this has been unbelievable. People are just learning things by going on Twitter, by going on Instagram, and then maybe following up on things from there. And that's where the different segments you talked about, Ohima, are really coming to light. Breonna Taylor wasn't mentioned for months after that happened. And I think it's like a main story every single day now. Now we're almost 100 days without justice for her, but every single day the calls are flowing in. Her name has reached nearly George Floyd level. I think there are disparities there you look at between the prominent Black men that have died, you know, Black woman, Black trans woman, maybe not as much attention on that end. But this is what the education infrastructure is doing here. And you talk about things outside the state, like people are learning on their own right now. People haven't been to school since March, but people are learning on their own probably more than they've ever learned in the school system about race, about all these different things. And that's something you can carry forward. I look back at the protests in Syracuse, and I was always so blown away in November at just how college freshmen and college sophomores had better idea of publicity and just getting these messages out there than like a billion-dollar university. I mean, they were beating Syracuse on the messaging front, and I think that's what's happening again here. Look what happened in Buffalo. They put out the statement, this old man tripped and fell when he got shoved in by police. And then like an hour later, the video's out there. Like, the system's getting beat to some degree by very savvy people and good messaging, like Kayla.
The internet is the great equalizer. Like, it is the great equalizer. And like, that is really what's different about us right now than what was happening in the 60s and 70s, because we have the internet on our side. And I really think that that is what's changing people's mindsets, and that is what is allowing people to hear other perspectives and allowing people to connect, to organize. And that's definitely, the internet is definitely a space you have to protect. For as many evils as it possesses so many great, good things. So I'm just really grateful for the internet always. Like, as I'm like, I'm so glad people, there's no excuse right now not to be informed. There's no excuse not to be educated.
We're talking to Ohima Dixon, artist out of Syracuse University, out of Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, Kayla Dorsey on the phone as well, information technology, public relations pro out of Syracuse, Dallas. It's been so great knowing both of you over the years, having these conversations. Where does Actathon go from here? I mean, you had the 2 days, you had all the phone calls, New York got blown up. I mean, we just know so many people in New York City. I'm sure the calls were flowing in, de Blasio and everybody else there. You hit almost every state like we talked about. You had the 2 days really entertainment through IG Live. Where's it go from here? I mean, the site's still up. All the information's still there. Like, is there going to be another round of this, another weekend? I don't know.
Kayla had touched on this, and some of the other members in our group, is that we've now reached such a great portfolio of people. I mean, we're reaching, Tessa Mae Thompson just followed us, and just like the power of social media, and like people we were able to reach now. And so we're, you know, thinking about, it's not just, this is what's now, and this is what's, you know, important. But there are past issues that have not been amplified enough. And I wish I came up with the idea when I saw other things and I kept thinking, what could I do? But I didn't really get this idea until I saw the scripts and everything. So now that we have this resource and know that we could really do this, we want to bring it to other things that are important. Trans activism, LGBTQIA. We want to bring it to Black women and getting justice for them. We want to bring it to Indigenous populations and what can we, environmental, and we want to bring it to these different parts. And it's really exciting, I think, waking up and starting to realize, holy shit, like Actathon can really be a useful tool because people are also listening to us. I think we have a cool follower base of people right now. We're just now starting, by the way, because they are listening to us. People are looking to us for direction. And it's a humbling moment as someone who was involved. And I think Kayla's doing that too, when you start to realize people are asking us what to do. And we're just figuring out now what to do. So it's really interesting, and we want to go forward and doing more. But yeah.
Definitely a work in progress, but today I was really proud. Like, our team made some designs for the women, the Black women who have died. So, I mean, it's going to be like an ongoing thing. It's definitely a living thing. We just don't know what it looks like yet. But that even makes it more exciting.
My biggest worry is the return to normal. This did happen at a very special time where there couldn't be business as usual. I think that's what usually stalls these things and limits the time frame that they have. So now, you know, people are going back to work. There's been an interesting conversation with the NBA returning. Kyrie Irving brought up this great point, and other players have touched on it too, that like, this is just another distraction among many that can pull from this when the nation has like its absolute attention on this right now. So they've even brought up maybe not playing just to continue to keep a focus on this.
I truly applaud them for that, and I hope they
play. I'm really proud of them.
I hope they're not listening. That's all. I really will. I will tell you one thing. If you want to grab mainstream white media, stop playing sports, because sports are black men and women.
Oh, we talked about this, me and Taylor, on the episode that's going to come out later this week. The level of trigger in the white sports media at the thought that they might just not play because of this movement.
And that's exactly why the NFL made that statement. I think that they are scared because they know exactly the wrongs that they have committed. And I think they are trying to combat that so that they have a season. But I'll tell you right now, if those players have the courage, and I pray and I manifest that they do, if they stop the NFL and NBA season, it sounds sad, but that would catch white people's attention. Yeah, because I don't think that white people care right now. And it'd be sad because that's what they cared about. But I want them to really understand that we are not their Negroes. Not at all.
It's a tough discussion too, because they're pulling in money that could be put toward that movement as well. I think that's another good point that's been brought up, that if they're working, if they're playing, they'll be pulling in millions of dollars that can go toward the other movements.
They've already donated their
money. Yeah, they already have hundreds of millions. At this point, I feel like we're all just distracted from the point of that change just needs to happen.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. That's Ohima Dixon. That's Kayla Dorsey. Great to have you both on here finally. I hope you both stay well. Hope we're in touch again soon and that this continues to move. Actathon.com, you can go check that out. Get in touch with your representatives. It can keep moving day to day. And, you know, as time goes on, maybe there'll be less of a flood of calls and you can get through to these people to have the actual conversations you need to have. As we said at the beginning too, support Kayla's business, Safe Loot, and keep listening to Dome Theory here. Appreciate you both. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.